This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. And you're probably like, damn, these podcasts are coming in very quick frequency. Yeah, I can't stop it. I'm a Geekscape freak. And also, there's a lot to talk about. I hope you've been enjoying Geekscape. Ian and I had a lot of fun on the Book of Boba Fett season one wrap-up special. It's Geekscape. This is what we do. We talk pop culture. If this is your first Geekscape, well, welcome. I hope you have like maybe a coffee or a nice drink, and you're sitting there enjoying your pop culture talk. Anyway, the Book of Boba Fett. Go back and listen to that episode if you've wrapped up all seven episodes of the first season of Book of Boba Fett. What can I say? The opinions were mixed on that one. And I still love my Star Wars. I still love a lot of that series. Go back and listen if you want to hear Ian and I's thoughts. But we definitely got some feedback, you know. Ian and I got called, what was it? We got called, weekend quarterbacks? No, couch quarterbacks? What's the word for it? Oh, whatever it was. But you know what? Like, I think anybody who reviews anything after the fact or talks about it is a armchair quarterback is the term. We're going to be doing some armchair quarterbacking here. We're talking about that first season of Peacemaker, all 8 episodes that dropped on HBO Max. We loved it. And again, if this is your first Geekscape, like, subscribe. We're talking a ton of stuff. We got the Batman coming up, as well as a movie Ian is calling his most anticipated movie of the year. That's Morbius, starring Jared Leto. He loves Tyrese Gibson, and he's got to see what he does in this Morbius movie. He cannot wait for Morbius. He's been talking about Morbius for the last year. He's like, oh, why does Morbius keep getting delayed? I was like, Ian, they're trying to make Morbius better for you. So you're definitely going to want to subscribe and see what Ian thinks about the Morbius. We also just talked to The Stereo. This is a rock band. That's one episode back on the feed. That rock band influenced Dashboard Confessional, Fall Out Boy, so many other big bands. And you're like, hey, who the hell are The Stereo? We'll find out in the episode that we just posted earlier this week. And then I promise we'll get to all the news that has been happening in the pop culture world. They're putting out this Justice League Avengers reprint for charity because, sadly, George Perez, who got a lot of us into comics with his artwork, is losing a battle with cancer. And so Superhero Initiative put out this JLA Avengers reprint of the Kurt Busiek George Perez run, and they limited it to 7,000 copies. There's a big uproar about that. I'd love to say something about it because I know my comic book store is frustrated. I know comic fans are frustrated, but there might be another side of that. And we don't know from outsiders what's really going on there. There have been tons of video game acquisitions, and you know, we haven't even talked about that. There's a lot going on in the pop culture sphere as we get closer and closer to the big Marvel blockbusters, et cetera, coming out this summer. And it's all I can do to keep laying the train track, because the pop culture train is coming. It's all I can do to stay ahead of this stuff here on Geekscape. So we're not covering what you want to cover, well, just remember, we have an entire network behind us now. We have about 20 shows covering everything from pro wrestling to video games to music to filmmaking and more. So search for Geekscape on any of your podcatchers. Subscribe to the shows. If they have the Geekscape stamp of approval, that means they're on the network. That means it's good stuff. And I'm really happy with where things are. The numbers here have been crazy healthy. So I'm just glad that a lot of people are listening. And I hope you still are after that little rambling intro. Again, we're going to be talking about Peacemaker season one. There's going to be some major spoilers. So if you have not watched all 8 episodes, this is where you should probably, in a wrestling term, you should probably tap out. Or is that, yeah, you can tap out in wrestling, but it's really the name. Whatever. We're going to be talking Peacemaker. I'm not going to delay any longer. Here we go. It's Geekscape. All right, Geekscapers, let's get to it. This is the Peacemaker Season 1 special. And Bolt T is already in the chat room there on YouTube. He says, how are the Russian downloads going? Still popular? Yes, I gave an upload. I actually gave an update on the last episode about how we're doing in places like India and like Senegal. We're pretty popular, top 10 in TV or film interview podcasts there. So keep us climbing. You know, the Russians, well, I don't know. We got a lot of downloads coming from the Ukrainian Russian border. I don't know what that's about, but I guess we're keeping the troop surge entertained over there. So, you know, I'm no war prophets here, but I got to tell you, bored troops sitting at the border for World War III, they need something to listen to, and why not make it Geekscape? Boy, that's grim. That is very, very grim. And Bolt T, I was actually thinking about you because 2-3 episodes ago, we talked about the GameStop stock phenomenon that happened last year. We were talking to our buddy, Jonah Tullis, who directed that GameStop Rise of the Players documentary about that whole, you remember, like a year ago, people became millionaires off the GameStop stock in the whole short. Really fascinating story. That episode's in the feed. And we talked a little bit about like how that led into like the NFTs and the crypto and stuff like that. And Jonah had a take that was interesting. So Bolt T, if you haven't heard that one specifically, I was thinking about you on that one because it was pretty cool. And I try and do a show that addresses your interests as much as they address my interests. Let me know if you're happy with your Geekscape. Send me an email, jonathan@geekscape.net. Cool. All right, here's Ian. Let's talk some Peacemaker. Ian, you ready to rock, buddy? I think you are. You're sending some last minute text. It's okay, buddy. Ian and I, Ian has been so busy that we're just like trying to find times to talk about these shows before too many days go by after the finale. But understand that Ian and I are talking about these shows pretty much as they're happening. We rush to watch these things before the internet spoils them. And that's definitely one where I texted Ian and said, hey, Peacemaker episode 8. Do not let the internet spoil you. And miraculously, he had not seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I was about an hour or two so behind you. But, you know, I mean, and in fairness, the listeners should know that you're super busy reading all those old Morbius comics getting ready for it.
When I sit down for Morbius, let me tell you how the Morbius is going to go. Because Ian, you, Justin, and I are going to see Morbius. We have two major Bat movies coming in March. We got The Batman. And I'm working on
getting a masterpiece.
You've seen it. And you texted us immediately and said it's a masterpiece. I'm working on Michael Uslan to come on the show. He's the guy who held the option on Batman since like the late 70s.
Yeah.
And he's been involved in every Batman movie since Tim Burton, etc. So Michael and I have been talking about him coming on the show. We're just trying to find his schedule. We're trying to get him the week of the Batman or the week after. I'm working on that one. I hope it happens. Geeks gave us, know that I'm working for you. But Ian texted us on Thursday and said, it's a masterpiece. Didn't even say what's a masterpiece. I believed that since Ian watches these Peacemaker episodes at midnight, that he was talking about the Peacemaker episode, which I was about to watch. Ian was talking about the Batman. So I'm excited to see it, man. I like Matt Reeves. Let's rock out. You know, I'm super stoked. So Ian, thanks for getting us tickets for that one, by the way.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I can't wait to see it. I was kind of like, another Batman movie. But when Ian says it's a masterpiece, I said, hey, if it's a masterpiece, I'll be super excited. If it's not a masterpiece, I'll have plenty of shit to tell Ian and like hold over him.
A 3-hour running time. I was never bored.
Uh huh.
And it, listen, it's not. it's more reminiscent of something like The Joker than, you know, than any big superhero movies. You know, it doesn't feel like a Marvel movie at all.
It's like, pensive.
It's like Chinatown or French Connection. I mean, it's just, it's crime that. Mystery stuff with great fight scenes.
Okay. Ian, you are getting me more and more excited. And honestly, I had said it on the show, The Bat and the Cat, I think was the name of the trailer that showed a lot more of like the Chloe, the Zoe Kravitz, mm-hmm. Catwoman kind of narrative. That kind of personal thing is kind of like the thing that's like, oh, that's Jonathan's into the movie, is mm-hmm. like how the relationships fold out. I'm a softie. I'm a sucker. I want to see how that works. So we'll be back in a few weeks with the Batman, Ian and I. But we're talking Peacemaker today.
Yeah. So listen, I didn't quite have a dub of peace.
Okay. Yeah. You got the Nightwing. It's pretty awesome, dude.
Yeah.
You're still pumped about that Batman. Okay. Peacemaker. I think when you texted me and said it's a masterpiece, I thought that you'd already seen the Peacemaker 8th episode. After I watched the 8th episode, by that time I knew you were talking about the Batman, but I think
Peacemaker holds. I mean, it stuck the landing. This holds for the
Peacemaker
too.
Stuck
the landing. I mean,
it stuck the landing, man.
You know, can I just say that there've been a lot of? Well, first of all, let me say this. It's so crazy to me to think that when James Gunn was canceled for that minute,
yes,
you know, and because of that, we get this.
Because of that, he had the window open over at DC. They were like, come over here. What do you want to do? He said, I want to do the Suicide Squad. And we loved Suicide Squad. You can go back in the feed and hear our thoughts on the Suicide Squad.
We loved it. And the Suicide Squad, a lot of people, I mean, supposedly the numbers, it's hard to tell because of the day and date, but didn't do well. Like, did really poorly, which I mostly blame on, you know, the name thing. Because outside of mainstream fans, like just going, the first one was Suicide Squad, now it's the Suicide Squad. You know, I mean, a lot of analysts think like it just didn't resonate, you know?
Yeah, what's crazy is that Suicide Squad did a fantastic job and was not a movie that we enjoyed. And sometimes that happens.
First two-thirds of it, I was really into it. Yeah. And then they just did the whole, oh, Robert, let's all come together, kumbaya thing. I was like, that's not right for this.
It was really weird when, and we're talking about the Suicide Squad with Will Smith. It was really weird when like Captain Boomerang left the team and was pretty adamant on leaving the team. You're going to get us all killed. He leaves the team and then he only comes back for a slow-mo walk montage. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I guess we're good. It was very much, it felt like style over substance. We don't know what was cut out of it. Release the hater cut. Just kidding. But we honestly don't know what happens with those shows and those
movies. By the way, you're joking. I would love to see Ayer's version. I mean, the whole everyone released the cut thing is tired, but I would love to see it because I do believe that, as often happens, you know, the studios get involved and they butcher things. At the same time, I tend to think the problem with Warner Brothers and DC movies is Warner Brothers as a studio is very, they cater to directors. And the problem with that, you know, as when you don't have a Kevin Feige as the boss, you know, individual directors handling a movie, you completely lose any sense of cohesiveness.
I've heard that as a studio, you know, just people who I know who've worked at that studio is that there's more of a competitiveness amongst the different arms than there is a kind of a symbiosis a synergy, right? So like the synergy thing, it almost had to lead itself to a multiverse. Where, you know, you've got the CW shows happening over here, and those are great. And then you have some of the movies happening over here. And then you have, like, spinoffs like Joker. You've got spinoffs like maybe the Batman. But you got, like, this lack of cohesiveness because everybody's just kind of in their own lane.
I have to say, their
own corral, I think.
I have to say on that point, and I know you're not a big watcher of them. I don't know how many of the listeners are. But as far as that Arrowverse, I mean, one of the coolest gets in the world that Mark Guggenheim pulled off was actually getting the movie version of The Flash onto the Crisis episode.
That shook the internet was when Ezra Miller was like, he just shows up and you're thinking Flashpoint, you're thinking multiverse. Already you'd seen things like Dean Cain show up and all these different multiversal characters. But that was awesome. And then you had Kingdom Come Superman from Superman Returns, and that was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said for these two studios, Marvel and DC, not negating old fans. You and I like read that. I think I sent it to you, that email from Feige that was going on after around the Amazing Spider-Man 2 script. It was leaked on, I found a Reddit link. I'm not going to question the legitimacy of that email. I think it's actually a pretty legit email. But it was an email chain saying that these characters should be treated more like James Bond, with like a loose kind of canon, than be reset every couple of years, where you have to restart the fan base. And if anything we learned from that last Spider-Man movie, it's that, you know, movies that maybe I wasn't a big fan of, like the ASM movies. I mean, Andrew Garfield was my favorite, arguably my favorite part of that film. And I did not love the Spider-Man movies Andrew Garfield was a part of, but I loved him in No Way Home. It was so good. So we get to Peacemaker,
look at Thor, you know, like, because Thor was great. Was... Yeah. And the first and second, the first one I had issues with, the second one I had more issues with, the third one's phenomenal. I mean, you know, it's a take, right? I mean, that's just it. No Way Home legitimized, redeemed, did so much for Garfield Spider-Man that I think everyone wants him. And I hope the rumors that he's going to be Spider-Man in the next Venom. I mean, I'm there for that.
You are already there for the Venom.
Listen,
nobody loves Venom more than Ian.
Listen, you know, the listeners can go back. You know, we did both those movies. The first one is such a piece of crap. But the second one, they went all in on what worked, and they avoided a lot of stuff that didn't. And it's still not a great movie, but it was fun.
I enjoyed sitting with you and watching it, yeah.
Yeah, but...
The three of us had a ball watching
that. Yes, exactly. But but come on, you do it with Andrew Garfield, great.
Oh, yeah. If Andrew Garfield shows up in the Venom 3, you're loving it. And you're like, okay, like this is all kind of working. But the Venom 3 also takes place, since we kind of know what's going on with the Sonyverse. Morbius. It always comes back to Morbius. Let's talk about Peacemaker. That's what people are downloading this thing for. Let's talk Peacemaker. Yeah. And ultimately, I don't know how long this episode is going to be, because I think
74 minutes.
Like beat for beat, we loved every episode of this show. I was thinking about things that I actually like scratched my head with on Peacemaker, and I loved every moment of this. And
it's so
I hate
much
to thank
fun.
The pandemic
so
for giving James Gunn a chance to make it. But damn, like James Gunn got stuck in a pandemic. He wrote this thing. They made it. I cannot believe it. I loved it.
Yeah, it was absolutely great. There's a lot of things they did with it that were really surprising. I mean, listen, episode 8, like, all the references throughout the show to Peacemaker, anytime you bring up another, you know, superhero, if you want to call him a superhero, you know, and he has some weird, crazy, nasty story. And I mean, that payoff, okay? I mean, first of all, like, you know, that, yeah, you're late dicks.
Aquaman fucks fish.
Yeah.
Aquaman fucks fish. We heard that one or two times. Like, oh, yeah, Aquaman fucks fish. And then at the end, I was so satisfied with that episode, just because the heroes pull it off in the nick of time. All the stakes are against them. James Gunn is so good at really introducing this kind of like universe, world threatening, hegemony kind of villain, right? Like a hive mind villain.
And here's the thing. And
they pulled it off.
And we came out of the Suicide Squad going like, where the fuck is the Justice League? Like, how did they not show up? Right? And then here it is again.
They say it in the movie, in episode 8, call the Justice League. This is, we're fucked. Call the Justice League. It's like, oh, the Justice League are off planet. The Justice League are doing this. We can't get the Justice League. They walk out of saving the day, and there's four of the Justice League show up, and in silhouette, and you're thinking, oh, that's cute. They're just going to keep him in silhouette. And I loved Cena, who's five times the star he was after this season than he was before, and he was already a huge star. He's like, you're late, dickheads. I fucking love that. He's yelling at Superman and Wonder Woman and Aquaman and the Flash. And then when you get the close-ups and you realize, oh, they got Jason Momoa and Ezra Miller to actually be Aquaman and the Flash. And then they bring back the Aquaman fucks fish jokes. It was amazing. Just the fucking cherry on top on all of this stuff.
I mean, seriously. And not only that,
I immediately texted Ian.
You have to saying, fuck you, Barry.
do not let the internet spoil this one for you, Ian. I was all caps text. Ian, you need this as much as you need to finally play the PS4 Spider-Man. Like, there's two things that Ian needed: for the internet not to spoil that joke, which I'm glad it didn't, and for Ian to play.
I actually Spider-Man. Have played it. I played the PS5, but you know.
Okay. If it's not your thing, that's all I can
do. No, it was very much my thing, and there aren't enough hours, so I can't. I know. Just can't happen.
You have to cut back on some of those shows you watch,
dude. My wife will divorce me. It's not even a question.
Oh yeah, y'all do like watching TV together. Heidi just runs off without me, and she just watches them, and she's like, "Oh yeah, this was good. This was good. This was good. That one stunk. You can skip this." So I have my own little TV guide. I will call her my TV bride in October. Okay, let's get down to this, because we talked about that, but from the get-go, I think that first episode is doing what I was kind of critical of Boba Fett for not doing in that first episode, which is plant a lot of seeds.
Yeah, they built so much.
You get all the members of the team in a very, very clean fashion. You get his father. You get a lot of different storylines. And then you get the mystery of the butterflies. Yeah, go ahead.
So the father thing was a really smart thing that they did, you know. In the comics, you know, his father was a Nazi, an actual Nazi. I mean, you know.
That's canon, Peacemaker's father was a Nazi?
Okay. Yeah. And here's the thing is, with DC Comics over the years gobbled up a lot of other companies. So Charlton Comics was one of the companies that they gobbled up. And a lot of people know about that because of the Watchmen history that, you know, originally Alan Moore was going to do the Charlton characters, and then DC said last minute said no, you can't. So everyone in Watchmen is just an analog for the Charlton characters that they bought, right?
Yeah, but so it was the Blue Beetle, the Question, and all these
characters. But a couple of the Charlton characters that weren't there were Peacemaker and Judah Master. So I just find that's interesting. But and then in Judah Master, both characters are very different. Like Judah Master, they retconned as a member of the All-Star Squadron, and I mean, Judah Master has nothing to do with the Suicide Squad in the comics at all. And that's fine, you know, because actually that works, because didn't really hear either, you know.
It was Peacemaker, was the comedian the analog for Peacemaker, or not at all?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. So I don't think so.
Yeah, because there are similarities in the sort of like Rambo-esque approach to the blanket violence approach to bringing peace in the comedian from The Watchmen and the Peacemaker, but I don't know who the Charlton character is.
I have to think about that.
So these are Charlton characters. They stayed Charlton characters until they became DC kept them kind of what they were.
They evolved, but what I wanted to say about Peacemaker that I thought was really, really smart that they did is, you know, because an actual Nazi is hard to do because time's gone by, you know? I mean, it's decades, you know, even though the comics don't always age that well. And then they have a character
in the U.S. again.
Yeah.
But you know they're Nazis.
They always have this character, White Dragon. So they just said, well, great, make him White Dragon, you know? So in the comics, they have nothing to do with each other. But it works. His father was an actual Nazi. He's a neo-Nazi. It worked really well, you know? I thought it was very smart. I thought, you know, even down to, you know, the upbringing and just the whole 80s thing of it, you know, because it's a place that someone like him makes sense he would come from in this day and age versus when the character was created, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, you know, the whole origin, all the way back, and we finally got all of it, right? About, you know, his brother, what his vow was. I mean, really, the whole show worked to really get into the head. I mean, it took 8 episodes. You got Peacemaker's origin gradually.
You're also working off of some of the things that happened in the late stage of Suicide Squad with the remorse he's starting to feel.
Absolutely. The Suicide Squad is necessary viewing. My wife hasn't seen the Suicide Squad or Peacemaker at all. And she actually said to me this morning, it's like, you know, it sounds like I'd really like that. Like, I'll watch that. And I just said, like, look, you don't have to watch the first Suicide Squad, but you want to watch the second. And I threw out the Idris part because that'll make her watch it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that'll do it.
But and I'm down. I'll rewatch. I'm fine with it.
I'm just going to keep touting how good Cena was. The moments he where amazing. He is showing that remorse, over what he did in Suicide Squad, the remorse that he has over what you learn is his origin story and the abuse he suffered from his father, like. this is such an intense show, but it also has the levity of a bunch of people calling each other dickheads and saying just some inane like conversations with each other that are hilarious.
Well, here's the thing. It's beautiful. Is what's really astounding about this show is it's a true ensemble. And you have so many actors on this show doing such fantastic work. Right? I mean, you know, I know, before the show we were talking about, you know, the TV performer of the week from TV Line with Steve Agee, you know, I mean, such great, I mean, episode 8, like, yeah, he just stole it. Such great work. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean,
there's a lot of thieves in this series.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're champions really all across the board. This really was a lot of fun to watch. And I know I'm trying to get into specifics and we just keep coming back to how great this show was. But if you haven't watched it, you're totally effed.
So one of the things I wanted to say, you know, I have to say going into it, I'm a giant James Gunn fan long before he did Marvel movies. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I always go watch a James Gunn movie. But when I saw some early trailer stuff, I was like, wow, okay. They got the vigilante costume perfect and the character's goofy and that's not my vigilante.
Vigilante is more of a hardcore murderer.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's Adrian Chase, Teen Titans. I mean, there were, you know, the Vigilante spun out of the new Teen Titans, created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. Adrian Chase was the DA that worked with them, and his family got blown up, and you know, he survived it and becomes the Vigilante. And yeah, and that's just it. He's serious about, you know, killing criminals.
He's the Punisher.
He's not even a question. He's absolutely DC's take on the Punisher. I mean, even down to when it came out, the Punisher's popularity just hit. That's exactly what he is. But Vigilante was so much fun. I mean, the tone of this show was just so, he just added to it. I mean, I laughed and laughed and laughed. And I love that he's completely and totally a psychopath. But right down to when, like, you're not sure what they're going to do with him early on, when he shows up and Peacemaker can't kill the kid, and Vigilante just shows up like just a complete psychopath. Just happily there just to kill whoever he's to kill.
Oh, it was a pleasure to him. He, you know, and not only that, but there was in his sociopathy, like his complete, like, sociopathy, is that the word? Like, it was him being a friend in killing this kid. He saw that
going to jail to kill his father. I mean,
yeah, he's like, let me do you a favor and just kill these people. Like, I don't even enjoy it. This is just me as a friend doing you a favor. And when John Cena can't pull the trigger on shooting a kid, and Vigilante just whispers in his ear and says, "Hey, like, it's okay. Let me do it." And then does it without, like, hesitation.
Not even a question. And that's the thing.
It's funny. It's insightful. It's character work. I'm with you on James Gunn. We've talked to him on the interviews for the show. The guy is just really good at those dichotomies of something that's a bit intense and then something that's hilarious at the same time.
Vigilante, throughout the entire run of the show, it's perfect that, like, he has no remorse at all. He doesn't know what feelings really are. Yeah, he's fixated on Chris as being his best friend. But, you know, other than that, like, he does it, you know, like he doesn't understand. I mean, he makes references to his childhood about that. He's always been that way. I mean, it's just, it's great. It's hysterical. Can we talk about probably my favorite performance of the entire series, bar none? Eagle.
The CGI Eagle. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Eagle is everything. What did you like about it? Eagle is everything. Well, I got to tell you, that moment when I actually thought that they can't, but for a minute there, I thought they were killing Eagle. I was losing my shit.
You really thought they were going to kill it?
No, I didn't, but I was that invested. I was like, I can't kill Eagle. Eagle's too awesome. And yet, I was like, no, did they do that?
No, you knew. Come on. They can't. It's like killing a dog. So, like, you can't do that. You can't do that. So, well, you want to lose the audience, you kill Eagle. Like,
yeah, but, you know, when the neo-Nazi does it, you know.
It does kind of help shade, but those neo-Nazis were already pretty shaded as bad guys. They didn't really need that last little thing to sell you on how bad the neo-Nazis are. Just call them neo-Nazis. We know they're assholes.
Speaking of deaths, I thought, I mean, listen, it's a great arc. It's actually really funny because Vigilante is so ready to do it, but it was actually necessary that Peacemaker kills his father. But I love that he's seeing his ghost and he's staying with it. And in the comics, he talks to ghosts and he believes in things like that. That's an aspect of the character that's where they got that from.
That's something I want you to talk about a bit is what characters came from the comics. Like obviously we'll talk about Judo Master, who's my favorite, and other characters. Like how close were they to their comic book counterparts? Obviously Vigilante's not, other than being a mass murderer.
It's not. Judo Master is also very different than the comics.
Eat hot Cheetos in the comics?
No, not that we've seen. The most recent Judo Master was female, was in Birds of Prey. The original goes back to the World War II stuff. So is an old character. There's a glimpse in the reset of things of like a Charlton universe. And so he's there. It's not much there. Listen, I just love how that they really dived in on the whole support staff thing. You know, I thought that was really great. The Waller stuff with the daughter is good. Waller's kids aren't that old in the comics, sure. but it works. I think it's good.
Daniel Brooks' character. Yeah.
Was it Leda, something like that? Agabando,
Leota Adebayo.
That was
the name of the character, played by Daniel Brooks, yeah.
Yeah. I thought they did some interesting stuff with Harcourt. I thought she was kind of one note in the Suicide Squad. She started there and they evolved her.
But Steve Agee's character as well. They don't get a whole lot of real estate in the Suicide Squad. You already have a pretty expansive cast that you have to kind of keep the plate spinning with.
I thought it was an interesting take and, it gets a little bit confused, the whole thing at the end with, the motivations of the butterflies and they actually want to, do right by us. And it really would have appealed to Peacemaker, but they would have killed his friends. So therefore, no, they have to go out. It sort of makes me unclear on what the motivation of, when the one and only one single butterfly doesn't agree with them. Yeah, I thought that was a little interesting. And I'd like a little more of that story.
And that was the Mern character.
Yes.
The Mern character, is that a character from the books, Mern? It's not, is it?
I don't think so. So I have to say, I think I said this on the Suicide Squad special, that one of the few runs of DC books that I never read all of is, I never read Ostrander's Suicide Squad. I've read any Suicide Squad.
Everybody, you're no use to me now.
I've read any Suicide Squad stuff probably in the last couple of decades, but it didn't go back further than that. I think that book came out in a period where I wasn't collecting. And honestly, what's that?
That period actually happened.
Yeah.
Comics?
College till, a little bit to late and long, well, mid high school to mid law school. I wasn't collecting. And then
you were trying to impress girls.
No, honestly, I'd moved out of New York and the shop I was going to was far away and it was soulless. No one talked to anyone there. And it just kind of threw off the rhythm of I wasn't able to get there that often. And, so I fell out. And then
you're also in college and don't have the expendable income, the disposable income. Yeah,
that was a bad part of it. Honestly, the way I started buying again is I actually sold my Star Wars figures and turned that into buying up comics. I had them in storage and I sold them and that's why I bought up a lot of back issues I was missing.
Wow. So the Mern character, I don't believe he's from the comics.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I do love that character because you don't really know his loyalties. And we're going to see Chukwudi Uwoji again in the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It's kind of a funny story while he was on Peacemaker, James Gunn shot his screen test to put him into Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And because they used kind of DC's crew to shoot the screen test for Guardians for Marvel, while they were shooting Guardians of the Galaxy 3, they shot Ezra Miller with the Marvel crew for his cameo at the end of episode 8. And that was kind of a cool
Ezra Momoa, right?
Yeah, it was just Momoa, I think, was already in, and he was shot. All those characters were shot on plates separately.
Okay, I thought.
But Ezra's stuff hadn't been shot yet. His part of that wide, and then the singles hadn't been shot yet. So, because they shoot Guardians of the Galaxy in North Carolina or wherever they have those, or Atlanta where they have those studios, it's I think they're Atlanta. Ezra Miller is there fighting the KKK. Yeah, Ezra Miller's there fighting the KKK, and they bring him over to the studio. Did you see? I sent you that video of Ezra Miller calling out the local KKK and saying he's going to fuck them all up while he's driving the car. Yeah. I want an update on that. Has Ezra Miller stomped out the KKK yet? Because if not, like, if there's still time, Ian and I can get in the car, come help Ezra Miller out. But he's the Flash. He does it fast. So just let us know, Ezra, if you're listening. If you've dealt with the local KKK chapter yet, we'll help you out. So Ian, we've got the cast. They're great. What did you think of the storyline? Are the butterflies something from the comic? This race?
I think it was completely made up. I've never seen it.
Cause
yeah.
And again, like,
and it was great.
James Gunn is somebody who loves doing this sort of singularity character.
By the way, the kaiju line there.
Yeah. There was another kaiju, and obviously
no
Starro was the reference. Yeah, Starro was the reference of the kaiju from the Suicide Squad film, which I hope you've seen because I loved that film and I love Starro. I do get concerned and start thinking, hey, like, is James Gunn just going to do these like body snatcher movies or these takeover like hive mind movies? Because he does it with like Slither. He kind of did it with Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He's done it with the Starro, he's done it with this one, but he does it so well. Jonathan, who cares? What I like about it, and why I like that it's unique to James, is he celebrates people who are outsiders. He celebrates people who are loners, people like Ratcatcher 2 in the first Suicide Squad, in the Suicide Squad, and he's able to celebrate these people. Like, I think we all fell in love with Guardians of the Galaxy, the best iteration of Guardians of the Galaxy in his film, because he really showed how much these people were rejects and how together they became a family. And he did it again here. And I will fall for that narrative every damn time. It's kind of why we started Geekscape, right? Like, we're all nerds. We're all rejects. We're all societal outcasts. That's why we like this stuff. But we become a family.
And that's the thing, is I think that, you know, the trope works because, look, eventually people with a common goal are going to find some common ground. I think that's human nature, mm-hmm. right? So I actually really like that it takes a while in this to get there, but it may eventually get there, right?
Yeah, he does it beautifully too. I think, again, like I've talked about, the sort of back and forth dichotomy between his extreme violence and intense dramatic scenarios and the humor that he throws in there. Some of the stuff is just, we talked about the Justice League stuff. What was some of the like funnier moments? They're usually attached to extreme violence.
Yeah, but it's also it's the witticisms. I mean, it's just so funny. It's for me, it all comes out of the character interaction stuff. You know, I mean, the Dyebeard stuff is so funny, and it builds and builds and builds, and then you get to, you know, episode 8, and you realize, God, it's just fucking terrible. And so that's what's really interesting, right? Beautiful. Because you have all these things that people so often do about taking shots at each other, right? And to then have, I found that it's sort of cathartic to watch, right? Like, it's just the, you know, it's bullying. You know, I think that was another thing that's really called out well about, there's a lot of statements made about that Peacemaker was a bully. He was a bully when he was a kid, you know?
And you have the close-ups of Peacemaker listening as Steve Agee is talking about why he dyes his beard.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. The reason that he's saying it is to convince the butterflies that he is one of them, and he's trying to get away with this scenario. And he has to admit to this bullying, and everyone's witness to it. That's what I love about what James Gunn's doing, is that he – and again, it goes back to what we were saying about Book of Boba Fett in the first episode, not planting proper seeds for the rest of the episodes to have real estate. You know, you plant the seeds, and then throughout this the season, you start to kind of see what grew, and you start to pull them. Here, everything's just getting cashed in. Everything he's laid out is getting cashed in beautiful and surprising fashion, which is why he's such a good writer. And that monologue is one of my favorite parts, where everyone has to witness, oh my God, the truth behind why he dyes his beard.
But
it's painful. It's beautiful. It's hilarious.
But right, but and for Peacemaker, it's at the right time because throughout the show, I mean, like even down, we referenced before, he doesn't want to kill the kids. Like eventually, he's like, I don't want to kill anyone anymore. Like he's going through all this stuff, you know. He's not in jail. He's out. He's dealing with his father. He's dealing with the pain of his brother. And he's you know, he's seeing even, you know, hardcore saying, oh, you're this piece of shit. Like, he doesn't want to be that. He's actually, we see he's a sensitive guy, but, you know, his upbringing is his upbringing. So him being a bully and being an asshole, him, you know, coming up with, you know, the mean nicknames to kids. I mean, so all these things he did that
he was to speak in the classroom and he's just calling the kids funny. Yeah. Like, that was amazing. Yeah, I forgot about that scene. It's great.
He's an asshole. But that's because he thinks that's okay. But then when you see his reactions to it, like, but he's actually a sensitive, you know? Yeah. I mean, he's at heart a sensitive person. Yeah. And, but you know, he's so hurtful, right?
So Jim Pellegrinelli did want us to talk about the sad true origin of Die Beard, secret badass of the series. And, you know, in going forward, we do see him by himself in that montage there at the end where the characters kind of like go back to quote unquote some version of their lives, but different. When we talk about a Peacemaker season two, granted, all these characters have to be back, but that Steve Agee character, like, he's almost, I mean, he's granted, he's the microchip in this team, sure, but it's him, Peacemaker and Vigilante, right?
I mean, listen, we don't know what's next. He goes back to Belle Reve, yeah, but, you know, but Belle Reve's been blown up. I mean, blown up, I think, figuratively. The Suicide Squad Task Force
politically, has been blown up. Politically, yeah. Yes. So, Amanda Waller's been put on blast.
We don't know what's next, but we know that, listen, there's a season two. Obviously, Gunn already knows what it's going to be or has an idea or it wouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm. You know, they wouldn't have announced it now without it, you know, him having some ideas there.
So one thing that Jim also said is that Peacemaker's bisexuality is referenced multiple times in the season. You actually see like the result of like a threesome and this and that in there. But he was at Belle Reve and he talks about having sex with the super, like, we know he tells Harcourt, like, it's been a long time since I've had sex. Well, with a woman, right? He's been in prison. Who is that person, do you think? And do they get involved in season two? Do we start to see like Peacemaker's?
I mean, look, here's the thing is, I don't think it's anyone we saw on, you know, in the Suicide Squad, because we would have a sense of that, right? So,
right,
you know, it can be anyone or anything, depending on what he comes up with.
I think Jim was hoping for, like, Bronze Tiger
Well, I feel like the question is becoming, like, you know, they obviously did the thing of Harcourt warming up to him at the end there, right? Sure. So is that something to do to add, you know, some kind of, you know, throwing a little wrench into, you know, a romance?
Sure.
And that could okay. be interesting.
One thing I expected to have happen, I don't think it ultimately made sense, was, and they only showed the character one instance in the eighth episode, was I always thought Judo Master was also going to join the team, but I believe that character would become redundant next to Vigilante. And I don't really know what that character would have done. And maybe that character was too OP as a fighter. With when you have the comedic, like, Adebayo and Steve Agee character kind of stumbling along, having Judo Master out there whipping everybody's ass would have been a problem.
I don't agree that it'd be redundant. I think the way they left it, we're going to see Judo Master again because he wants to kill them, because for whatever reason, he believed in the butterflies and their cause. So he's coming to kill them still. And what's funny to me about Judo Master is, and I think that, you know, there's maybe a bit of a, I don't know if this ends up being a racial stereotype or not, but there's a Kato quality, a la Pink Panther, to him in that situation, right?
I just like that he killed two Boondock Saints fans. That was like my favorite part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just awesome.
These two dudes talking about Boondock Saints, and I was like, oh, they need to get their asses kicked.
But do you know what I mean about the whole, you know, the Clouseau Kato thing about, like, you know, out of nowhere he'd attack him? Which was, for me, growing up, was one of my favorite things. I loved that. I always thought that was so funny. And I feel like that's what we have, that, like, photo to Judo Master. Like, Judo Master comes out of nowhere to kill them. At any given time, Judo Master might just show up and try to kill them.
Well, Ian, there's a we know that there's a second season coming that's been published, but also there's that word that there's another Suicide Squad character in it that they want to do a spinoff show from Suicide Squad.
So that's the question.
Might be.
I mean, yeah, you know, it's a guaranteed hit if they get Bloodsport, but I don't, you know, I don't know that Idris will do it, but listen, Idris does Luther. So just because it's TV doesn't mean he won't do it. You know, right. Then, you know, I mean, I think maybe Ratcatcher.
A Harley Quinn series it sounds expensive as well. A
Harley Quinn series won't happen. I don't see that happening.
Okay, so we have Eagly.
That's, I mean, listen, I could be wrong, but I think they did a movie. I don't see them doing a series, you know?
So we have Eagly. That's your favorite character. That's a full CGI character. And
they could do an Eagly spinoff. I would watch it.
I think I agree with the Facebook user who says,
please. King Shark would be awesome. Don't see that happening.
It's a lot of
CGI. It's kind of a lot of money.
Andy Ratinger, who we're going to talk about here in a little bit, because he's our resident metalhead, and he's given me a top five needle drops from the season that I'm going to read to y'all. He says Polka Dot Man, but we saw Polka Dot Man spoilers die in Suicide Squad. I will tell you, Ian. Did I tell you I went to Starbucks this week on the way to
you didn't tell me about Starbucks.
No. I went to Starbucks, and as I'm walking to Starbucks, who's walking out? Polka Dot Man, David Dermer. I will never get David. I'm so sorry. I know I've invited you on the show to come up. If you Geekscapists don't know, David, who played Polka Dot Man, my partner in Geekscape, George Callert, and I, we both helped David finish a film a couple years ago that won South by Southwest. If you haven't seen the movie, it's called Animals, and it's about David. If y'all don't know David's backstory, he's very open about it. David was a heroin addict for years, and he lived in a van outside the Chicago Zoo for like a long stretch. And this movie that he made was about that period of time. And if you go back and you see David, I think in Batman Begins, that's the first time I saw David. He plays kind of a hood in Batman Begins. That was before he was in Prisoners with Hugh Jackman. That's kind of around the time I met David. We helped David kind of shoot a scene from his movie and all that. So I've known David a few years, and I was walking into Starbucks. He's walking out of Starbucks with his daughter. I go, "Hey, David," we catch up. He's got this comic book Dark Horse puts out called Count Crowley. If you can go and find the trade for the first four issues, it's worth it. It's a lot of fun. I think you'd enjoy it, Ian. Okay. There's a new Count Crowley four issue miniseries coming out in the next month or two. And I've invited David to come on the show. We'll see if he does. I mean, this dude was in Dune. He was in David is super busy.
Sounds like so it's too busy for you. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I can barely get Ian at this point.
Listen, I make it work for you. Don't act like I'm the only one that's busy. You know, your schedule is not so easy to work with either.
Ian, you are our Polka Dot Man.
That's not true.
You don't have mother issues?
Everyone has mother issues.
He was also an Ant-Man, Andy Ratinger says. Yeah, he's an Ant-Man. No, I love David. And he's super kind, and it was good to kind of like really briefly catch up and then drink coffee. Hopefully he comes on the show. We had Sean Gunn on the show last year. Like, why not? Let's do it. Okay. So Ian, anything else to say before I give you our resident metalhead, Andy Ratinger's top five needle drops from this season of Peacemaker?
I mean, probably, but you can go ahead and give them. Let's see what they generate.
So Andy and I kind of like had a little bit of I don't think it was too awkward, but Andy was so excited because Andy is a resident metalhead. He's been a metalhead his entire life. He loves that people are now enjoying the music from Peacemaker because he was like a loner who listens to metal, and people were like, why are you listening to this stuff? This stuff is outdated and it's 80s and this and that. And Andy felt alone in his love for, you know, this music, and suddenly
James I do Gunn love that. By the way, awesome. It's another smart thing that Gunn does because he gets it. Is that like people that are so different, and then they have music in common, suddenly they appreciate each other.
Oh, and it's like it's like the music they have in common is like the cock rock music. Most people are like, what? I haven't heard these bands in a long time, but I mean, I guess if you're a big music fan or you went through college radio like I did, like you know these bands because they are still popular globally. So let's get to it. What I was going to say was Andy would watch the episodes, and on Twitter, he would get so excited. He would like just like brain spasm out the name of the band. Like he would name drop the band and be like, oh my God, they blank blank. And he wouldn't even say that he's watching Peacemaker. He wouldn't say that like anything else about the scene. He would just yell out the name of the band. and I know a lot of these bands. And I was like, and I texted him. I said, well, I said, Andy, stop. Like, these are spoilers. So you may not think they're spoilers, but they're spoilers. Because then I'm watching the episode and being like, oh, this is the scene where they're going to play this song. And, oh, this one's coming up. And it, they're spoilers, right?
Yeah. Any commentary watching spoilers. Something that people haven't watched it's putting ideas in your head. It's why, as you know, I mean, I think a lot of people feel this way, but my wife thinks I'm crazy, but for a variety of reasons. But this specifically, that I like to see things as soon as possible for other people. I don't want to
keep
hear
it fresh.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
I don't want to hear the song. I don't know what the soundtrack is. So Ann and I kind of like texted back and forth. I was like, hey man, like you kind of like I would kind of love you just like I follow Andy on Twitter. I think all of you should follow Andy on Twitter. I was like
you need to stop or I gotta stop following.
I kind of need you to stop doing that because I'm literally checking the boxes as I watch the episode and I'm like, oh, somebody just put a tape in the radio. I kind of know what's going to play, you know, or somebody just literally put a needle on a record. I know what's going to play. That being said, the fucking soundtrack to this is a bunch of fucking jams.
Gunn is pretty good at that.
Like he's done awesome. That before, huh? I love what he does with music in his films. That being said, Geekscapers, there's too much music to talk about in this series. I really hope somebody on the internet has compiled. It might be something Geekscape should have done. Compiled like a episode by episode listener list. The best we can do is I asked Andy to give us the top five from the season.
I bet James Gunn, I'd be surprised if he doesn't put that out. You know, it's his jam, right?
I mean, those Guardians of the Galaxy soundtracks charted. Great. Like they did really well. They actually sold. So I would say that that's something he should do for Peacemaker. DC, get on it. Like Warner Brothers, you have a music division. Okay, so Andy says, I picked five that aren't the ones that are already hits or better known. I asked him for five songs. Like Motley Crue, I thought that piano scene where they're doing Motley Crue, where he's playing the piano, fantastic. Or Firehouse, or Kix, or Faster Pussycat, or The Poodles, the Wigwam song. Everybody loves the intro of the Wigwam song. It's unskippable. Shit, I even had to leave off the Neil Sean song. Neil Sean, you tell me how it's pronounced, Andy. But here are the top five, I think in order of Andy's favorite songs. And I will tell you the scenes. He's going to tell you the scenes that they're in. Okay, so first, you got Reckless Love from Monster. That's a band from Finland. Very pop metal overall. Lots of Def Leppard and Guns N' Roses influence, but they've gotten heavier. They're catchy as hell. This song is what plays during the epic arrival and invasion of the butterflies. So when you see those butterflies coming to Earth, and then they invade, I think, the police precinct and start going up in everybody's mouth.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I think maybe they shot it and it didn't include. Why do we not see a butterfly go up anybody's butt? It was a piece of discussion I was expecting during the police precinct.
Probably because you don't see anyone taking a dump.
Yeah. I was expecting to see a butterfly go up somebody's butt.
I mean, wouldn't they need their pants down for a butterfly to go up their butt?
No, I mean, the butterflies are violently getting through glass and other things in that scene. They can rip a little pant. They can rip a little
pant. But why if you have another orifice?
But just to pay off the discussion earlier.
I get it. But, you know, I mean.
But I got you. Season two. We got a couple butterflies in that one.
Maybe.
And we should talk about, like, what we think. There's still a surviving butterfly. What we think is going to happen there. Okay, number two on the list, maybe not in order, is Sister Sin by Fight Song. That's a band from Sweden. You can't go wrong with a badass woman fronting a hard rock band. They're rocking out to this as they drive to the factory where the butterflies made their food. The episode with the cow, I think that's episode 7. They're listening to Sister Sin. Santa Cruz by Drag Me Down. That's another band from Finland. This band has gone through more lineup changes than LA Guns in one-third the time, but somehow everything they put out is just melodic as hell. This one's playing when Peacemaker and Vigilante are shooting the appliances in the woods and they're fucking blowing shit up. The next song is Kiss and Dynamite by 6 Feet Under. That's a Germany band. These guys are just incredible. Not a single one of their albums has disappointed me, so you guys need to get to the Spotify or go buy these albums. This one happens when Goff is torturing Vigilante and is in that cave and he's tied to the chair and he's cutting off a piece of the finger or toe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what's playing is Kiss and Dynamite by 6 Feet Under. And then Hardcore Superstar.
That's a two?
It was episode 2 or 3, yeah. Hardcore Superstar is You Can't Kill My Rock and Roll from Sweden. That riff is fucking magic. And this one is one of the newest songs in all the show, which just proves how timeless and kick-ass Andy's beloved genre is of heavy metal. Admittedly, these guys are pretty big compared to the rest. You Can't Kill My Rock and Roll. This is the track that plays the very end of this season finale, I believe when everyone's going back to their quote unquote lives, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, you're in the chat right now, but that's why we got it. Yeah. Andy would like to say that he's very thoughtful about spoilers and he's sorry for posting the Twitter. Andy, I just pay attention to what you do because I love you, man. You're like a brother. One thing that Andy is throwing in now is an important element to the music. When Peacemaker is doubting his role with the 11th Street Kids, he plays Home Sweet Home on the piano. I think that's the song, the Motley Crue song. 11th Street Kids, a song by Hanoi Rocks. We listen to them in the episodes. Whose drummer Razzle was killed in a drunk driving accident when Vince Neil was behind the wheel. Wow, that was him. The other members of Motley Crue wrote So Home Sweet Home to welcome Neil home out of prison, which is kind of like Peacemaker's story. The meaning of choosing that song to symbolize the break in the 11th Street Kids is excellent. Yeah, that's actually crazy. If you know the backstory of the song Home Sweet Home and you know the story of the Peacemaker, which you should now in this season, that actually is beautifully, that dovetails. All right, Ian, are we going to see Goff again? This is the surviving butterfly.
I think so, yeah. I don't think he would have done that without an intent to see it.
Okay.
Gunn doesn't do things like that for no reason.
He didn't see you put a butterfly up somebody's butt. They mentioned it.
There you go.
We might have to still see a butterfly go up somebody's butt. Ian, what do you want to see out of season two? We have had the hive mind storyline that Gunn does. I don't think we can do that again, right? Like we did it with Ego in Guardians 2. We did it with Slither. We've done it.
I don't think we see that again. I'm intrigued that he blew up Task Force X. Okay, because I think that that was very intentional for an evolution. You know, the question becomes, what does that mean? What does that look like? Does that mean that they're the new version, because obviously they were an offshoot, right? Of Task Force X.
Yes.
I mean, they were under Waller's auspices to some extent.
There were two teams sent in. One team was a distraction team, right?
I mean, they only had the one and ultimately second sort of criminal, right? Involved. Mm-hmm. The rest were actually operatives. So not exactly a Task Force X situation, but, Waller seemingly had some oversight.
There's no Suicide Squad sequel, is there, announced? Because it didn't.
There's not, exactly.
Right.
And what they called out was that they called out, as far as government agencies go, that they were Argus agents.
Yeah.
So, listen, there's a lot of places to go with it. And obviously then that explains them dealing with the alien stuff.
Sure. So you're thinking more alien invasion.
Yeah, and listen, if the comics are any indication, I think that, you brought up the multiverse. I think the extra dimensional aspect, could be very interesting and a place to go.
Well, we got Weasel. Weasel survived that invasion. Mm-hmm. We saw that in the post credits, which is awesome because we love Sean. But also TDK survived the attack. So maybe we have Fillion back, and obviously Gunn loves Fillion. TDK, what does that stand for? That was Nathan Fillion's character that can like detach his pieces and bring them back and stuff like that. He can shoot his limbs out and bring them back in. Hilarious. I mean, I hope that as much as I do want to see King Shark get their own series or maybe a prequel, a Polka Dot Man prequel would be cool because we do know that Polka Dot Man had siblings that were also experimented on. And things like that. The detachable kid is what TDK stands for. I would love to see more of these kind of offshoot, crazy reject DC characters given the James Gunn treatment, because I think they did a great job. And Vigilante, like, that's our Vigilante now. And I don't know if DC cannot take this treatment of the character into canon there
with it. Well, no, yeah. I don't know how they do that. I mean, obviously they can. They just ignore the previous one. But, that character's great. The character's so much fun. I think it probably Gunn's clearly having fun with it, What I like also is, we've talked a lot about the Snyderverse, about what the DC stuff, DCEU looks like. Honestly, one of my favorite things about the fact that Gunn included the Justice League in this after all the references is that, my personal fear, obviously what's happened with Affleck, what's happening with Cavill, you know, it's felt like there's a lack of singular vision, right? And it's really hard to ignore the stuff that's come up until this point and then just keep certain stuff. And I get you could say, you know, what's working, what isn't working, contract negotiations, all the things, you know? Obviously, they love Wonder Woman. They're keeping with Gal Gadot and Wonder Woman. Obviously, they love Aquaman. You know, they're diving in on Flash. It seems likely
the movie will get a sequel too, in its own narrative.
I'm not commenting on that.
Okay. We'll have a special for you, Geekscapists, in like 2-3 weeks.
2 weeks, I would think.
Two weeks,
probably to the day. Well, I can't actually on the 5th, but anyway,
let's talk about it. Yeah,
we'll. But the point is that, you know, for me, I'm happy to see that, okay, you still, the acknowledgement of the Justice League, of all these characters, of this bigger universe. I mean, I know a lot of people have commented, hey, Green Arrow is in canon in this universe.
Yes, he's commented on Green Arrow he called him a furry and a delinquent, sexual delinquent.
I mean, hysterical, but the point is that he's there somewhere, you know?
Yep.
So that's great. Oh, what I was starting to say is, it seems to me that in some way they're going to retcon. I think they're going to post Flashpoint. It'll be a new version of the universe. I hope that they have some true vision on this. But I think that Affleck's out and Keaton's in.
Keaton's in a kind of an older, like,
yes,
Hank Pym style. Yeah.
But the point is that because we know he's in Batgirl. And it sort of passed the baton sort of thing. And that seems to indicate that that's what we're going to get post-Flashpoint, is that
Keaton
is the Batman of this universe now.
I love how they're passing the baton back. Back to a 1989 film, which is amazing. And if I do get Michael Uslan scheduled to line up and get him on the show, I'd love to talk to him about it. He was one of the big proponents of that Tim Burton hiring back in the day.
I have to say, what's interesting to me about that is, you know, you've heard that both that and there's talk of a similar thing with Supergirl, you know, taking over center stage over Superman, right?
That would be the TV Supergirl or a new cast of Supergirl?
No. They're doing a new version of Supergirl, right?
Okay.
So what's interesting to me, I mean, let's talk about Batman first, right, is it sort of gels up a lot with what was talked about with Future State, when the Future State was actually going to become the new DC universe, and then they end up just making it an event. And yet, a lot of the aspects of Future State still are sticking around. I mean, Jonathan Kent now is fully Superman. They have Superman off in space, you know? And I don't see them going back on that. They'll just be two Supermen, you know?
Sure. And there can be multiple Batmans.
Yeah, so and that's like, just it. Exactly. The next Batman now is just Batman New York. John Ridley's Batman, you know, is just another Batman.
So you have the Bat Corps for the most part.
Sort of.
What was it called? What was it called when
Batman International?
Batman International, yeah. Okay, so we have that, I don't see. I mean, I was talking to Cooper Barnes, our buddy who plays a superhero on TV. He's on Henry Danger. He is
Batman Incorporated. Sorry,
Batman Incorporated. He was like, how long are they're not going to keep doing this multiverse stuff with all Marvel and this and that. I think multiverse is ultimately Marvel's phase four, but I think it will always be there. I think with both these companies, the multiversal aspects that have been in the comics, you know, since the 60s, 70s, to, you know, when these things started looking, you know, when they started getting burdensome lines and continuities, and they had to start kind of Crisis is the famous one in 84, 85, 86. I think the movie fans are going to start realizing, oh, a multiverse is part of all of these properties, and we're going to be living with multiverses in both DC and Marvel in some aspect, maybe not as big as Phase 4 Marvel, but in some aspect going forward for the rest of time, because these movies will never end. You know, do you agree that we're always going to be living in a multiverse with both these companies as contracts get renewed and as storylines need to be redone and as they kind of course correct their narratives?
I think the idea of the multiverse was a really smart thing that they did in comics, you know? And then I think it's interesting that both companies sort of got rid of them and then they bring them back again, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, DC truly wiped it out and made the big meta thing. I mean, it was Crisis on Infinite Earths. So they merged it all. You know, then they did Hyper Time. Then, you know, there's the new 52. You know, like they keep doing that.
Yeah, you got Marvel really excited.
Marvel did it with the incursions. Yeah. So Marvel did it with the incursions.
Pre-Crisis Superman punched through stuff. You got so excited. You're like, pre-Crisis Superman's back. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marvel did it with the incursions, which is where I think they're building.
In the new Secret War. The new Secret War was one of those things where it was like, oh, this is their crisis. And it lasted maybe a month. maybe two.
I think with DC and Warner Brothers, I think, you know, you're always going to have an aspect of a multiverse. I think that Marvel is building it up and building it up to tear it down. Eventually, it's going to be a while before they do. But I think that, you know, eventually we're getting Battleworld. It's going to be Secret Wars. I think that's where they're going to go. What's curious is about the time frame, because it would be, listen, you know, years are going by, actors are aging. Like, that would have been the best way in the world to just bring over the Fox X-Men, but that's not what they're going to do. You know?
What are they going to do, Ian?
Well, I think they're just going to start it over, and they're waiting long enough to just do their own thing with it. You know?
You saw that Multiverse of Madness trailer?
Yeah, I did. So we're going to have aspects of it. And that's just it. Multiverse. That's exactly it. I mean, in the same way, because we've already seen it in No Way Home. Okay. We've seen that the other things exist. It's the multiverse. It doesn't mean that the version in the MCU's universe looks anything like it.
Yeah.
They've made that very clear. So you can get, and by the way, I don't know if you saw this today, that Patrick Stewart is claiming wasn't him.
Okay. Maybe they use that voice modulator they did for Mark Hamill in episode 6.
Yeah, he's saying that, you know, people since early in his career, people have imitated him and it wasn't him. That's what he's saying. Okay. He might be full of shit. You know, this could be an Andrew Garfield, you know, going on about, but yeah, that's what he's claiming.
May 3rd, May 4th, we will find out what's going down with Multiverse of Madness. I was so hyped for that Doctor Strange 2 trailer. Well, Ian, I think that's what we have to say about Peacemaker season 2 or season 1. Let's look forward to season 2 is what I want to say. I think Geekscapists, we've given you plenty of reasons to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't on any podcatcher, because Ian and I will be back in 2 weeks talking The Batman, a movie that Ian Kerner calls a masterpiece. And I've got the very excited all caps text to back that up. If there was a poster made, it should just say a masterpiece quote, Ian Kerner, the say all end all of comic book movies.
I don't know if that's true, but
it's been good enough for Geekscape for 15 years, and it's good enough in 2 weeks when we talk The Batman, and in 2 weeks after that when we talk about your favorite movie of 2022, The Morbius. You're going to miss that stuff if you don't subscribe, so please do. It's nice talking to y'all in the chat. I love that my good friend Jacob Bowser was like, hey, I love that you're posting these on LinkedIn now. Yeah, I started posting them on LinkedIn because, like, why not? And Jacob's over there. He built our early Flash player back in the day for Geekscape. So thank you, brother. Thank you, brother. Good to see you in the chat. Colin Lundgren's in there. He yells, Aquaman diddles fish. Yes, I think that's canon now. Geekscapists, thank you so much. Ian, you can follow him on at Ian L. Kerner on Twitter. He's also hanging out on Facebook. If you join us at the Geekscape Forever Facebook group, you can leave us some questions for Ian. You can also find tons of us. There's like 20,000 plus of us on the Geekscape page on Facebook. That's fun. And then, of course, we're on Instagram. Search for Geekscape. You'll find us. And if this wasn't enough comic book talk for you, well, we got other shows on the network. Masters of the Media is a good one. That's one we added that compares things like the comic book source material to what we're getting in the film.
Remember when we used to do Geekscape and I used to talk about comic books?
I can bring you on a regular Geekscape, Ian, but it's like we can do that. But, I mean, there's so much of this pop culture stuff. It was manageable on a weekly basis. Now I need an entire network to cover all this crap.
I get it.
And I know that Garrett.
So I read comic books weekly.
Yeah, but Garrett does too. Garrett and Jack. Cool. And they just compared Frank Miller's Year One and were like, hey, what elements of this are in The Batman? Let's do a little compare and contrast. Only Ian really knows the answer to that. And we'll find out in 2 weeks what's going down. Geekscapists, thank you for being a part of this. Subscribe to Geekscapes, share it with your friends. Leave us a 5-star review on all the podcatchers. You know the drill. For Ian Kerner, don't hate, create. Bye, everybody. Give you a peacemaker salute, Ian, for the video viewers. There we go. Geekscapists, over and out.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.